I'm Carson Horn, and it's Monday at 10, which means it's time for Talking Tumors on Weagle 91.1. So grab your toilet paper and let's get rolling. A Pirate Looks at 40 by Jimmy Buffett was the song that led into our show today, but I promise you, that will not be the vibe of Talking Tumors on this Monday morning, coming at you live from Auburn, Alabama. I am Carson Horn. Thank you all for listening, whether you're listening live or listening on podcast. Yes, we've got a lot to dive into. We've got to talk about what happened in Spokane, Washington. I know that many of you have tried to process it. We're now nearly 72 hours since the final whistle of that game, since the buzzer went off. But still, I think many of us are still trying to wrap our minds around what happened. I'm going to do my best to explain it. I'm going to address fans' points of view. I've listened to many, many different people. I've read many different things over the last near 72 hours. I've seen ton of different perspectives, tons of different opinions. I know a lot of folks had emotional reactions, and that is typical, that is normal, that is to be expected. But I'll respond to some criticisms and some things that I don't really think are fair, some opinions that I don't really agree with. And you're probably not going to agree with some of my opinions. That's fine. That's what opinions are for. And I don't expect you to agree with some of what I say today, but I'm going to get into all that. But besides basketball, we've still got Auburn football to talk about. Spring practice rolls on. We are just coming up on A-Day. It will be a week from Saturday, so that is coming really soon. So we've got to talk about that. Auburn baseball got a big win on Saturday against number one Arkansas, so we'll talk a little bit about that. So with all that being said, there's plenty to get into, but let's start with Auburn basketball. Let's start with this loss in the first round, the NCAA tournament in Spokane, Washington, to Yale. This was the first loss ever by Auburn basketball in the round of 64 of the NCAA tournament. Didn't see it coming. I talked about on the show last week how it could happen, but really, I did not see this coming. This was about as stunned as I've been in a loss for Auburn. Just nothing went the way I expected that game to go. Just a weird game. That's what has to happen if these type of upsets are going to occur. But that's the NCAA tournament for you. You never know what's going to happen. Upsets happen that you don't expect. The upsets that you do predict, that the Cinderella teams that you do think are going to make a run, end up losing, like McNeese State, like Samford. Those are teams that were popular picks. Those teams don't win, but a team like Yale defeats Auburn, and that's just the unfortunate aspect of it if you're an Auburn fan. So yes, it was a shocking season-ending loss, 78-76. So what happened to cause this loss for Auburn? I think it was a multitude of factors that I've listed here. I don't think it was any one single factor. I'm never a believer in that. That's caused a great bit of debate between me and my roommate over that over the last few days. It's just not the way I view things. I'm never one to say this one call by an official cost the game. This one player doing this, this one play caused this. I always think it's a multitude of factors. Are there things that disproportionately affect an outcome of the game? Absolutely. But in my mind, it's never one thing, because you change that one thing, then why can't I go change this one thing over here that will benefit the other team? So that's why I like to say multiple factors. But the first factor that I think a lot of people would agree with, and some people would argue was the only reason, was the ejection early in the game of Chad Baker-Mazzara. Chad Baker-Mazzara has been one of the best players on Auburn's team all season. Fantastic player. He's had some issues controlling his emotions all season. He has gotten multiple flagrant ones. In fact, Auburn, I don't know how many straight games Auburn has had either a technical foul or a flagrant foul called in, but Chad Baker-Mazzara has been on the receiving end of those. Officials knew about him, even though these were not SEC officials in this game. At this point, everyone knows who you are, and you're going to have a close eye on you. Chad Baker made a dumb decision. I think he could admit that. I think the Auburn coaches, I think anyone would admit that what he did was wrong. He elbowed the Yale player intentionally. There was no reason for it while they were running down the court. We can sit here and argue whether he should have been ejected or not. I didn't think he should have been in this situation, but by rule, that it was fair for him to be ejected because flagrant 2 says unnecessary, non-basketball related type of action, and that is what Chad Baker Mazzara did. There was no reason for it. So by rule, the officials had the right to eject him. Again, personally, in that situation, in the NCAA tournament game, I would not have. I didn't think it rose to the level of needing to be ejected for it. But there's plenty of arguments for him being ejected. Again, by rule, he could have been ejected. There's no doubt. And whenever you lose one of your best players, it's going to have a huge effect. Auburn's strength was their depth this season. And that took a hit. Auburn, of course, the scoring took a hit because Simo, no offense to him, is not the scorer that Chad Baker Mazzara is. So it hurt you in that instance as well. It forced players who have to play more minutes, like Denver Jones and like Katie Johnson. So it affected you in the way you defended as well. Again, he was the Yale's best scorer, was their three man. So it took Chad Baker Mazzara off of him. Again, it affected Auburn in big ways. There is no doubt about that. There's no arguing that. And that was certainly a major factor in why Auburn lost. Number two was the fouls and inability to get stops. We can sit here and fuss about officiating all we want to. We know Auburn was a team that fouled a ton all year long. Just the way they defended, the way they were aggressive trying to force turnovers, it led to a lot of fouls. They were a physical team. But Yale came into this game being a team that really did not draw many fouls. And they shot 31 free throws in this game, and they made 21. That was a big difference. So, yes, Auburn fans can fuss about officiating. Nonetheless, Auburn fouled too much and then couldn't get consistent stops, and that is extremely rare. This Auburn defense was a top 10 defense in college basketball this season. One of the best defenses in the country. Just could not get consistent stops. Yale was 9 of 20 from three-point range. It again, just a weird game. It was surprising to see Auburn inability to stop Yale. And that of course played a big factor. When you're weak in one of your strengths, it's going to be tough to win. And we saw that in that game on Friday. Now, what I believe was the biggest reason for the loss with the final 7 minutes. Take all of that out. Auburn was up 10 with 7 minutes to go in this game. And they had the chance to pull away. I thought they were going to. Auburn has shown that in so many games this year. The ability to pull away late and end up winning by double digits. I fully expected that was what was about to happen. Yale was struggling to stop Auburn's front court, especially Jani Broom. When Auburn got up with 7 minutes to go, fully expected them to win the game and win the game comfortably. But, as I said last week on the show, if you let these teams, these Cinderella-type teams, stay around late in these games, and you give them a chance, most of the time, they've got shooters who can make tough shots, you're going to put yourself in a tough position to get the win. And Auburn didn't close the door. They had a terrible final 7 minutes, went 3-for-9 from the field, and 2-for-7 shooting free throws, 6 turnovers the rest of the way. Yale went on a 20-to-8 run. And lost the game. That determined the game. Did not make the shots that you need to make in those critical moments. Did not make your free throws. Did not get stops. Sent Yale to the line. They took advantage. Overall, offensively, up until that point, Auburn shot 51% from the field in the game, 35% from deep. You take away a couple of those last-minute heaves from three, that's near 40%. Shot plenty well enough to win that game until the final 7 minutes and just played bad basketball, and it cost Auburn the game. Who knows what would have happened had Auburn survived? Did I go back to that 2019 team? Did not play well against New Mexico State, but survived that game. Really, New Mexico State fans could argue they should have won that game, probably should have. Auburn survived it and went on to the Final Four. Who knows what would have happened had Auburn been able to survive it? Had they been able to make some of those free throws late? Had Katie Johnson been able to knock down that last second three at the end of the game? Who knows? Those are a lot of ifs, but it didn't happen. At the end of the day, Auburn lost this game, and it's something that the Bruce Pearl and Auburn fans and those players will have to deal with the rest of the way. But as I sat there again, just in stunned fashion, as I'm sure many of you did, on Friday night, I was just, this is a weird game. And I got to think, like, Auburn just had not lost a game like this, I thought, originally, all season. I was thinking back to the Florida loss and thinking back to the Alabama loss and thinking about the how those games played out and just the really, really poor offense in those games and just not shooting at all. And I was like, that's really not how this game played out. And then it hit me. So I actually think this game might have been similar to the Baylor game. And, of course, there were differences. But I went back and I looked at how that Baylor game finished. And I looked at that Baylor game as a whole. That was the first game of the season for Auburn, if you don't remember. Auburn lost that game 88-82. Auburn led by 9 at halftime, led by, I believe, 6 or 7 at halftime against Yale. But I went back and looked at the final couple minutes of that game. So with 6 minutes left in that game against Baylor, Auburn led 75-69. They had 4 turnovers in that last 6 minutes, went 3 from 11 from the field in the last 6 minutes. So a very, very similar. Yale went on a 19-7 run in the last 6 minutes. So very similar to the 20-8 run Yale went on in the last few minutes. So it is funny how that works, that your first loss and your last loss of the season were very similar. No other games the rest of the way were like those two games. It's just funny how things work out sometimes. Disappointing for Auburn, no doubt. The Baylor game was also a game where Auburn struggled to defend and get stops. Yale was the only other game that was really like that. Tennessee game, Auburn's defense struggled as well, but very few outliers in there where Auburn just could not get consistent stops. So finally, before we wrap up this segment and I talk about the team and look back on the season, talk about the future, I want to address a few points of contention about this game that I've seen from fans. I think one I already hit on a little bit, and that was blaming Chad Baker Mazzara for this loss. Did that decision hurt Auburn? Absolutely. I thought what Dylan Cardwell said after the game was very mature. It was a very appropriate response. I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of throwing elbows and it's not championship mentality. That's not putting the team, above yourself. And I thought that was a very good comment from Dylan Cardwell. Of course, he was frustrated and emotional losing that game too, but that was a fair comment. So Chad Baker Mazzara, he has to own that. He hurt his team. He let his team down, but it was not the only reason for the loss. Now, I believe that he plays. There's a solid chance Auburn wins that game, but I also believe that Auburn wins that game without him probably 9 out of 10 times too. So, again, just a weird situation. Second thing is, it's easy to blame the guards. But Auburn's guards were not the only reason Auburn lost this game. Aiden Holloway did not have a good game. That is true. I thought Trey Donaldson played well until the final couple of minutes. The turnovers were spread out. Auburn had too many turnovers in this game, especially in the second half, but it did not come just from the point guard position. I think of those 6 turnovers in the last few minutes, I think it came from 4 different players. So it is easy to just cast dispersions and say, yeah, it was the guard's fault, the point guard position fault. Yeah, the weakest point of this team this year, I would agree, was the point guard position, but that does not mean that was the only reason Auburn lost this game. So I don't think that was fair. So those were a couple of points that I wanted to address from fans, and I'll address more in this next segment about some other fan responses to the game as a whole and some of the thoughts on the program that I just simply don't agree with. So I'll talk more about that in the next segment, and I will talk about what this season meant to Auburn, talk about the success of this season, and some thoughts moving forward. So stay tuned to Talking Tumors as we'll dive into all of that, as well as some football talk and baseball talk to come later in the show. So stay tuned to Talking Tumors on Weagle 91. Football team, be remembered. Because we're still so close to this past loss, it's hard to go ahead and look back on the season and remember the highs because you're still working through the pain of that loss, and I understand that. But when you look back on this season, this was a fantastic team, and that, to a certain extent, makes that loss in the NCAA tournament so much more painful because you knew how good this team was. But let's focus on the positives here for a little bit. This team finished the season 27-8, had 26 wins by double digits. the just dominated nearly every in every game that they won. They nearly dominated. Only two losses all year by double digits. Also, just really, really impressive to be that consistent. This team was very consistent, and again, that just makes that loss against Yale so surprising. And there's an argument, and I fall on the side of it, that this was the best team that Bruce Pearl has ever had. And so again, yet again, I go back. That is why that loss was so painful and so shocking. Analytically, there is no arguing that this was Auburn's best team to date. It was overall, when you put in all statistical categories, offense, defense, there were some things that some other Bruce Pearl teams were better at, yes. Go back, 2019 was a little bit better shooting. That's true. 2022 team did some things better than this team, but overall, put everything together collectively, this was the best Auburn team that Bruce Pearl has ever had. So we can argue that another day. Of course, they didn't make the run that 2019 team did. They didn't win the SEC regular season like the 2022 team did. Didn't have two NBA pros on it like the 2022 team did, but the offense was really good. You did have really good shooting. You had a dominant front court with Jani Broome and Jalen Williams that made this team really, really good. Of course, this team still won the SEC tournament, and that can be easy to forget now, but that's a big deal, and I know to some people it isn't as big of a deal as maybe it is to me, but you hang a banner for that. You get a ring for that. You get a trophy for that. That's a big deal. And Bruce Pearl talks about winning championships, and when he says that, he doesn't specify, because you want to win the SEC regular season. You want to win the SEC tournament. You want to win the NCAA tournament. So that's what you mean when you talk about championships and not just limiting yourself to a NCAA tournament and a national championship. Of course you want that. Auburn's in a different place. I understand if you're a Kentucky fan, then no, you don't care about that as much. It only at this point does national championships matter to you, but Auburn's in a different place than those programs are. The blue blood programs, Kentucky and Kansas and Duke and North Carolina, so forth and so on. So yes, regular season championships matter to me, and I think they should matter to Auburn fans. They matter to Bruce Pearl, and that's why I believe in soaking in the regular season and soaking in those runs in the SEC tournament, because the NCAA tournament is so unpredictable. You look back at this season, Auburn checked all the boxes that you want to check going into the NCAA tournament. They were hot shooting. They were playing their best basketball. They won the SEC tournament. You talk about the things that you want to do, that you focus on when talking about when you're working out in the summer. The things you're talking about, hey, we want to be at our best in March. We want to be peaking at March. We want to be doing this and that. Auburn did all those things. But again, that just goes back to the greatness and the terribleness of the NCAA tournament. It is so fun because, again, if you get hot in that tournament, yeah, anything can happen. But also, the upsets happen as well. Even if Auburn wins that game against Yale 9 out of 10 times, they didn't win it. Kentucky probably beats Oakland 9 out of 10 times. They didn't beat Oakland that day. So it's what makes it so great and makes it so terrible if you're on the losing end of it. And so for that reason, I really try to soak in the regular season. But I know a lot of fans are not like that. I know a lot of college basketball fans are just focused on the NCAA tournament. That's the only thing that matters to them, and to each their own. That's fine. And if it does, then yeah, you're going to be mightily disappointed, because Auburn has not had a lot of success in the NCAA tournament as of late. With that being said, looking back on the season, this was a very good team. Whether you think it was the best Auburn team that Bruce Pearl's had, that's up to you. Sad the way it ended, but this team brought a lot of joy, I think, to Auburn, brought a lot of joy to the students, to the fan base as a whole, and I think that's how they should be remembered, and that's how they will be remembered when that SEC Tournament Championship banner is hung next season. With that being said, I'm sad, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I've listened, I've talked to many different people, I've got many, many different opinions, I've read many different opinions, but I've waited to issue my own on what happened and what it means, what happened in the NCAA tournament and what it means for Auburn and where this program goes from here after another early round exit in the NCAA tournament. So this is my time. I've been waiting to share my opinion, And again, I'm sure that many of you will disagree and have different opinions. That is fine. But I'm going to share mine. I'm going to address some of the arguments that I have seen. So why has it been boom or bust in the NCAA tournament for Auburn? I can't answer that. I think honestly, it as I just mentioned, it's just the way the tournament goes. It's just so unpredictable. Is there something that Auburn's doing wrong that is causing them to falter early on in the NCAA tournament? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think there's one thing that you can point out in particular that Auburn is doing wrong. But because again, Bruce Pearl hasn't changed that much, and you made you made the Final Four in 2019. Bruce Pearl's still the same coach. He still does the same thing. So I don't think there's one thing in particular that has caused Auburn to fall. I just think that just goes back to how the tournament is, and I think that's the main reason it's been boom or bust. But that doesn't mean that you can't, if you're Bruce Pearl on the staff, you can't reevaluate things. See, okay, do we need to adjust this or that? That is fair, but what I don't think Auburn needs is a change in philosophy, and that is what has bothered me, I think, the most. And not every Auburn fan is saying this, but there are some that think that Bruce Pearl needs to change the way he does things. What he does works. Again, you won an SEC tournament championship this year. You won the SEC regular season in 2022. I understand the frustrations in the NCAA tournament. I get it. All Auburn fans, all Auburn coaches, all Auburn players are frustrated that the season ended the way it did, but that doesn't mean you need to blow things up. Let me read you this. So, Virginia won national championship in 2019. They haven't made it out of the first weekend since. Kansas won national championship in the last couple years. Has not made it out of the first weekend since. Baylor won national championship in 2021. Has not made it out of the first weekend since. Those are all great programs. Scott Drew, Bill Self, two of the best coaches in college basketball. No one is saying they need to blow things up and change their philosophy because they haven't made it out of the first weekend since they won a national championship. It is just the way things go. That doesn't mean that you can't try to get better players. That doesn't mean you don't tweak things. But saying you've got to change the way you do things completely is unfathomable to me, because Bruce Pearl has had so much success. And the biggest thing I see is that, well, Bruce Pearl's got to change his philosophy of guards. No. If you want Bruce Pearl to change something, okay, do you want him to have a better point guard? Sure. I'm not arguing that. The point guards were the weakest point on this team this year. They weren't bad by any stretch. Auburn's point guards had a top 10 assist to turnover ratio in the country. That is really good. I understand the frustration of not having a high-level score at the point guard position, sure. But to say Auburn needs to change their philosophy and Bruce has got to stop recruiting small guards, the majority of the best guards in college basketball are 6 foot or around that margin. You think about a Mark Sears in Alabama, a Shedd at Houston, a R.J. Davis at North Carolina. All those guys are around 6 foot. Yes, they are better than Trey Donaldson and Aiden Holloway. Yes, they are a little bit different physically, a different build possibly. But to say Auburn's, I don't care if Auburn has a 6'4 point guard. If they can't shoot, they're going to shoot 20% from three. That doesn't matter to me. It's just saying, well, they just got to get bigger guards. That's an easy way out, and that's just not true. Bruce Pearl's philosophy for small guards can work. Jared Harper was not a big guard. He led Auburn on a Final Four run. If you want to say Auburn needs better play at the point guard position, I would agree with you. That is fine. That is fine to argue, because, again, if you look at why Auburn has not made a deep run in 2022, losing in the round of 32, it was because Auburn's guard play was not that good. At that point in the season, it kind of faltered, and teams have figured out how to defend Wendell Green and Zepp Jasper. So I think it is fair to want better guard play from Auburn, but to say that Bruce Pearl needs to blow things up, I just think it's completely wrong. I think that the way Bruce Pearl does things works, and I think if he continues to do things this way, Auburn will continue to have success, and they'll make a run in the NCAA tournament. If you are not going, and here's my other thing, if you are not going to say these things, if Auburn had won this game at Yale against Yale, then why are you saying them now? And I say that because As I mentioned earlier, Auburn should have lost to New Mexico State in 2019. They didn't, and they made it to the Final Four. Who knows what would have happened had Auburn won this game and against Yale. Maybe they beat San Diego State and they face UConn and they lose. Or maybe they lose San Diego State, but maybe they beat UConn and maybe they make it to the Final Four again. It's just so, I mean, just change one little thing and it completely changes the trajectory. So if you aren't going to say these things after the season anyways, why are you saying them because of the Yale loss? That is my opinion. I know people may disagree with that, but I firmly believe that. I would have said that Auburn needs better point guard play next season, no matter the result of how this year finished off. I wouldn't have changed my view on that. That is fair to say, but if you weren't going to say, well, Bruce Pearl needs to change his philosophy after if Auburn had won against Yale, but you saying it because they lost, then I think you're wrong there. And so, yes, I might be on the more optimistic and the positive end of the Auburn fan base. I get that. But I just think the NCAA is just such a crazy thing, the NCAA tournament is, that I just don't put that much stock into it. Should Auburn have made a better run in 2022? Yes. Should Auburn have made a better run this season? Yes. Does Bruce Pearl have to take the blame for that? Absolutely. He owns that. I'm sure. I know he owns that. And he has to assess, are there things that I'm doing that aren't translating to the NCAA tournament, or is it just a matter of the unpredictability of it? And those are things that are hard to say from the outside looking into that program. But I think if Bruce Pearl continues to do what he's doing, if Auburn continues to play at a high level defensively, continues to recruit top talent, they're going to be fine. This won't continue to happen. They will make another run again, if not multiple, in the NCAA tournament in the years to come. That is my thought on it. Again, as far as the guards go, yes, Auburn could get better play from the point guard position. There's no denying that. We'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. But Auburn basketball does not need a big overhaul. Bruce Pearl does not need to change how he does things. The way he does things work, and I think it'll continue to work, and I do think Auburn will have more success in the NCAA tournament moving forward. I understand the frustration. I do. I know it's tough when you're sitting here and Alabama's still playing in the NCAA tournament and Auburn is not, and I don't think many people would argue that Auburn did not have a better team than Alabama this season. I get the frustration. I do. But Auburn needs to worry about itself, needs to focus on itself. And again, Auburn fans are sitting here worried about Alabama making another Sweet 16. And Alabama fans are still sitting here worried about Auburn having a Final Four, and they do not. So both teams need to acknowledge, in my opinion, that both teams are fantastic programs, both have fantastic head coaches, and worry about their own selves. I know that's not going to happen because I know how this rivalry is, but that's just my two cents. Again, I hope I didn't ramble on too much in that segment. I hope I was clear in my thoughts. I do not think it is fair to rage and go on and on about how Auburn does things. I understand the frustration. Bruce Pearl knows how to coach. He knows how to run a program. He's proven that. Auburn will be fine in the NCAA tournament. It was unfortunate how this year ended up, but Auburn basketball is in great shape, and they'll continue to be. With that, we've got to go to break. When we return, we will switch gears to Auburn football. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Matt Kenseth. You don't have to be
administration and the ad council.
A-Day is quickly approaching for Auburn football. Really looking forward to seeing Auburn in action in A-Day here in just over a week. Last year's A-Day, as you remember, everyone was excited. It poured rain. Really could not take much from that game at all. It was ugly. So hopefully get pretty weather for A-Day this year, and hopefully there will be plenty of takeaways that we can take from that game in year two now under Hugh Freeze. But I wanted to give some thoughts. Have not talked much about Auburn football so far this spring just because, again, we spent a lot of the show over the past few weeks talking about Auburn basketball, but I needed to get some thoughts in here on how spring practice is going. We'll have much more after we see A-Day and things of that, and we start looking at the transfer portal again and talking about where the roster needs to go before the fall and summer. But for now, I've got some thoughts on this team, mainly based off of things I found interesting from what the coaches have said in their interviews to the press. If you're not subscribed to Auburn Undercover at 247sports.com or Auburn Live on 3, both those sites do an incredible job covering Auburn football. They've had great insight when the media has gotten to watch practice. They've done a great job covering the team, so I would recommend checking in on those guys like Nathan King and Justin Hogson and Cole Pinks and some of those guys that cover Auburn. But let's dive into now. First, I want to start off with the quarterback position because, of course, that is the hot topic. Is there a quarterback battle going on? Is Peyton Thorne still going to be the guy this season for Auburn? To answer those questions, no and yes. No, there is not a quarterback battle going on in my mind. It doesn't seem to be that way from what I've read, from what Hugh Freeze and Ken Austin have said to the media. Peyton Thorne's the guy, and he will be the guy this season. He seems to be doing well. I think the coaches have been pleased with him. It certainly seems to have been positive comments. Of course, in everything in spring, you have to take with a grain of salt. Because who's going to come out and blast their players? Everything you hear in spring is going to be, oh, this is great. This guy's doing great. This guy's showing off in the weight room. Yeah, it's hard to get. If you're having negative stuff in spring come out, then you've got some problems. Because pretty much everything in spring is very, very positive. So that's why last year you knew when you were hearing bad things about the wide receiver room. You're like, oh, boy, if you're hearing negative things in spring, that is not good. And we knew the wide receiver room was atrocious last year. We'll talk about that, though, in just a second. But back to Peyton Thorne. And the bigger question in this quarterback room might just be the QB2 battle between Hank Brown, Holden Gerner, and freshman Walker White. I think Peyton Thorne's got the top position locked down here for Auburn. And I want to talk about Kent Austin because he provided some great insight into the offense. And if you haven't read or haven't gone and listened to his full comments, I'd recommend you do. I'm sure you can just look up his interview because he said some just insightful things. And I know that Hugh Freeze has been very high on Kent Austin since he hired him. Last season, he was an analyst. He was OC for him at Liberty. Very, very high IQ football guy. So it was great to hear from him. I want to read this quote on the offense talking about the differences from year one to year two. Again, I had a cut out of this because it was an extremely long quote, but I wanted to read part of it here. This is a quote from Kent Austin. He said, quote, "There were obvious first-year issues in getting to know our players, understanding their ability, putting them in position to be successful. We had some deficiencies offensively. I won't talk specifically about that other good football teams took advantage of and exploited. Some of it you handle through recruiting and getting better players. There's always growth in the first year and going into year two and year three. That will show up on the field with consistent coaching and development." So no shots were fired against anyone, but you could tell that things are going to be done differently on the offensive side. I think it was tough for Kent Austin being an analyst, not being able to be as much hands-on this season. Again, he didn't want to take any shots at any players, but they realized they were talent deficient in major areas, especially at the wide receiver position last season. I think improvement there will help Peyton Thorne a lot. I think there were times where he was not comfortable and wasn't trusting in his receivers, and that caused him to make some poor throws, some poor decisions. I also thought it was interesting the insight Kent Austin provided. He gave an example of Peyton Thorne. I didn't read the quote because it was going to be too long, but to summarize, he explained a situation in the Iron Bowl where Peyton Thorne did something they had not even practiced because he had the football knowledge to understand the situation, understand how the defense was lining up, and knew that there was going to be something there that Auburn could exploit. So he showed that to point out that Peyton Thorne has a great knowledge of the game. And so I think that was great to hear if you're Auburn fans. I know that Auburn fans have a contentious relationship with Peyton Thorne. I get that. But hearing those things from Kent Austin should give Auburn fans some confidence moving into year two with Peyton Thorne at quarterback. And how about the offensive line room? If you've been listening to this show, you know I'm high on this offensive line. I was high on them last year. They had their deficiencies, especially in the passing game. I think that's going to improve this year. They brought in Percy Lewis, the transfer from Mississippi State. That's going to allow Dylan Wade to move inside to guard. You're going to have year two under Xavion Miller at right tackle. Jeremiah Wright more than likely going to start at right guard. And then you've got Connor Lou at center, who Jake Thornton, the offensive line coach, said has a chance to be one of the best centers in the country. I would fully agree with that. He said he's going to be an NFL center. I would also agree with that. It's huge to have him anchoring this offensive line. And then Tyler Johnson, he is someone who is really coming on. He is a redshirt freshman, and he's competing for that other tackle position. I think most people have penciled in Percy Lewis, and that's a good chance that it will be Percy Lewis. But Tyler Johnson's really going to push him, and if he does not bring it, Tyler Johnson is going to be good enough to start at his tackle position, and that's the great thing. Auburn's going to have depth on the offensive line. They're going to have 7 to 8 guys who can really play the position and play it well. When you think about Jaden Muskrat as well as kind of the utility offensive lineman, you add Tyler Johnson in there, you've got at least 7 guys who can play and can play at a high level. So I'm really excited about this offensive line room. For the first time in a long time, I expect it to be a strength of this Auburn team. As for the wide receiver room, Camden Brown and Cam Coleman. So the two Cams are really showing out so far through spring practice. I want to talk about Camden Brown first. He is someone in his freshman year really shined and really looked like he had the potential to be a stud receiver. And then last year was very inconsistent, struggled with drops, struggled to get open. So it was a little bit of a disappointing year two for him. Maybe this year three is where he breaks out. He certainly has showed out so far in spring practice, and hopefully that'll continue for him. Right now, he's certainly in that starting rotation. So I like Camden Brown a lot. He loves Auburn. So I hope that he really has a big year three. But as for Cam Coleman, he has lived up to the hype. And I know Hugh Freeze has been careful to not put too much pressure on him. But he immediately stood out in the first spring practice Auburn had. Just his size, his strength, his weight, I mean, everything. He looked like every bit of the 5-star top 10 player that he was, number one wide receiver in the recruiting class. And he's going to have a big role on this team this season. Here's a quote from Hugh Freeze on Cam Coleman. Quote, "Cam Coleman, he just looks different. I can't tell you how excited I am about him. I don't want to put too many expectations on him as a freshman, because he is just a freshman. And I know you guys don't want to hear it, but we're still in the early stages of building this program, particularly in the way that we want to build it through high school." End of quote. So a little bit more of Hugh Freeze getting back into his way of doing things, which I completely agree with. I've talked about that before. But on that Cam Coleman quote, you can see that Hugh Freeze is impressed by Cam Coleman and the player that he is going to be. But again, it is important to be patient with freshmen as a fan base. I know how excited Auburn fans are about Cam Coleman, but still need to be patient. There will still be growing pains, but he's going to be a key piece for Auburn this season. And then finally, I wanted to address just shortly, I didn't get much into the defensive side of the ball today, but I did want to mention DJ Durkin, of course, taking over as defensive coordinator. Something I was interested in was to what was his defensive philosophy going to be like? How was it going to compare to Ron Roberts and what he did last season? Because Auburn's defense was pretty good last year. So what was DJ Durkin going to do same? What was he going to do different? He didn't go into a lot of detail, but this was his general quote from Durkin on what his defense is going to look like. Here's the quote. Quote, "I think there are some similarities that will be good for our guys that they can draw from. A lot of times it's learning a new language. We may call it this, you call it that, those terms. But I think for us, it's focused on being better, aggressive in everything we do. We want to apply pressure on the quarterback. Defense is so much about your effort. How do you tackle? How do you execute? It's about how you do those things, that what you do. How are we going to do things? With great energy, effort, execution, and tackling." End of quote there from DJ Durkin. So again, didn't really get into X's and O's like I might have hoped for in the answer, but I like the aggression. And if Auburn plays with aggression, look, big plays are going to happen. You want to allow less. You don't want to allow a lot of those explosive plays. But getting after the quarterback is key as offenses have moved more to throwing the football now in the SEC. Got to get pressure on the quarterback. That is of huge importance. So really looking forward to watching DJ Durkin. Everything that has come out of practice so far, I think the players like his intensity, his energy that he brings. He holds them accountable at a really high level. Is really hard on them. I think things about Vontrell King Williams, the new defensive line coach. Really, really hard. Charles Kelly, old school guy, coming in there, played under Pat Dye, coaches the players hard. This defensive staff is really, really good. Wesley McGriff, of course, in the secondary as well with Charles Kelly. So I'm interested to see what kind of the base defense looks like in the 8A game. Is it more of a four down, three down with defensive linemen? So how does that look? I will be interested to see. So again, I'll preview 8A more next week and go through the things I'm looking to see in the game. So you won't want to miss that on next week's show. That'll be a big focal point next Monday here on Talking Tumors. But with that, let's get in our final break. And when we return, we'll talk a little bit. Auburn baseball has had a tough start to the SEC play. Again, I said when I previewed the season for Auburn baseball that I thought this team was going to be really good. I stand by that. I still believe that. But it has been a tough start, but I think a lot of people could see this coming. Auburn had to go to number 8 Vanderbilt to open up SEC play. They got swept up there, had chances to win, weren't able to make it happen. Then they had to come home and host number 1 Arkansas. So I think Auburn had the toughest draw as far as to open up SEC play. But this team has got a good lineup. They've got pitching talent. They're going to be fine. I think they're going to be a very good team. The SEC is just extremely talented as always. And so it was never going to be easy for this Auburn team this year. Last year's team, though, started very similar. They struggled at the beginning of the year. They settled in, especially on the bump, found a good pitching rotation. And then they made a good run into the postseason. I think you'll see a similar result this year from this Auburn team. But getting that win on Saturday over Arkansas in Game 3 to avoid starting 0-6 was big. Auburn won that game 8-6, fell behind in that game. This was the record crowd at Plainsman Park was set on Saturday. Butch Thompson talked about how much that meant to him because Auburn had lost 2 straight. For Auburn fans to show up and support the team like that meant a lot. And again, this Auburn team's fun to watch. They have a lot of really, really good players. And so for Auburn to get that come-from-behind win, they scored 6 runs in the 6th inning to get the win. Cooper McMurray is having a fantastic season so far. He had a huge 3-run home run to take the lead for Auburn in that 6th inning. And Auburn came out, held on, had good bullpen pitching, and was able to get the win over Arkansas. So yes, still not a good record to start SEC play to be 1-5. They have to go to College Station, I believe, now, next weekend, which won't be easy either. Again, no game is going to be easy. No team is going to be easy to beat in the SEC. But Auburn's sitting in a good spot. What do they need to adjust moving forward to continue to work to improve this season? I think still a lot of it is figuring out this pitching rotation. Connor McBride got the start in Game 1 this weekend. It had been Chase Alsup for the first series and for most of the series in non-conference this season, pitching Game 1. But Auburn went with Connor McBride, who had been throwing the weekday game, moved him to the starting rotation on the weekend, and he threw excellent. Auburn lost that first game 1-0. So I imagine that Auburn will stick with McBride. He threw 4 innings, gave up 1 earned run. But really, Auburn's got to get better outings, I think, from Joseph Gonzalez especially, but also from Chase Alsup. Chase Alsup has not been bad by any stretch, but I think that Joseph Gonzalez really has struggled again. He didn't pitch for a whole season. He's still working back into things. Auburn needs him to get back to that 2 years ago type of level. If he does that, then Auburn's going to be in good shape. When they find those 3 good starting pitchers and they all those guys settle in, whether it's Alsup, Gonzalez, and McBride, whether it's Carson Myers that works his way back into it, whether it's Christian Herbert-Holtz, Auburn has options. They just have to figure out what is the best trio to go into these weekend series that gives the team the best chance to win. Now, the funny thing is, Auburn struggled a little bit at the plate in these first 2 games, and that is something that's been a strength of this team, is the hitting and the pitching has been what has struggled. But that's sometimes how it goes. Auburn faced one of the best teams, one of the best pitching staffs in the country. In Arkansas this weekend, they struggled to score runs, left too many runners on base in the series, and it cost them, especially in that first game, losing 1-0. But overall, this lineup is really good. Bobby Pierce is struggling so far this season. Auburn needs to get him going, as he's been one of the best bats. But can't complain about Ike Irish. Can't complain about Cooper McMurray. Cooper Weiss as well, shortstop, has been fantastic. Chris Stanfield really starting to come on as well for Auburn. This team continues to hit, and they figure out their pitching. They're going to be fine. Looking ahead to this SEC, to this matchup this weekend, like I said, Auburn travels to Texas A&M for a three-game series. A&M, very, very good. They're 21-3 this season. They took 2 out of 3 at Mississippi State this past weekend. So, will not be easy. I'll be interested to see what the rotation looks like for Auburn against Mississippi against Texas A&M. Does McBride stay in game one? Do they go back to Alsup for game one? We'll see how they play it. Does Joseph Gonzalez stay in there? So that'll be the decisions that Butch Thompson and his staff have to mull over before this weekend. But with that, we will wrap up today's show. Again, we spent a lot of time on Auburn basketball. I get that. We'll continue to talk about Auburn basketball. I've got more things I want to hit on. I want to talk about Jalen Williams especially and kind of look back on his career. So I'll do that next week. We'll start to talk about what the roster is going to look like as well. There are going to be many changes, I'm sure. Plenty of decisions have to be made for a lot of guys moving into next season. So we'll begin those discussions as well. And we'll look again, preview A-Day, continue talking about Auburn baseball. So just to give you an idea of what the show is going to look like moving forward the rest of the spring, we'll continue to talk about the roster movements, the transfer portal for Auburn basketball. We'll spend a lot more time talking about Auburn baseball. We'll spend some time talking about Auburn football over this next month. So it'll be a lot more bouncing around, a lot more than we have over the last few weeks where it's been really dialed in to Auburn basketball. It'll be a lot more variety will be added to the show. We'll also try to come up with a few different fun segments to really get into that'll be entertaining and fun to talk about. So thank you all for listening, whether you listen live or listen on podcast. We'll see you next Monday at 10 right here on Weagle 91.1. Thank you for listening to Talking Tumors. Make sure to tune in again next Monday at 10 for another edition. Also, make sure to check out Weagle's 24-hour live stream on WeagleFM.com. And follow us on social media at Weagle_AU. War Eagle, and see you next time.